sorry.
You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Happy New Year? Wow. That is one tall order, isn't it? Happy birthday. Well, that's doable. Take a single day and keep it fun and upbeat. Merry Christmas. Okay, one day, or maybe a few days bracketing December 25. Also doable. But Happy New Year? 365 consecutive days of happiness? Good luck with that. And this year, there's a different twist on the salutations. Instead of Happy New Year, there's a lot of Adios 2020 and Good Riddance 2020 and Hey 2020, you sucked! Memes and messages like that. Which actually brings some happiness if you like to laugh at pretzel logic and the magical thinking of children and idiots. As if there is any reason whatsoever to believe that at 12:01 a.m., January 1st, 2021, the world will be any different than it was 1 second earlier. Calendars and dates are as meaningless as curlicues on paisley patterned fabric, yet people place such significance on them. New Year's has acquired this nutty mythology that a fresh page on the calendar or a few ticks of the clock hands will make everything different. And those New Year's resolutions, ha, high comedy. Layered on that is the notion of it being the wildest, craziest night of your life. You must attend the biggest party, the one that's off the chain and lit, and drink the best booze, and have a lip lock on a supermodel at midnight, etc. Otherwise, your New Year's is a failure. With expectations like that, celebrating New Year's Eve guarantees disappointment. People like to look back this time of year, make a list of celebrity deaths, isn't that fun? Make note of what kooky crazes gripped the nation or the world and then evaporated. Words and phrases that were a part of the lexicon and then were not. The Macarena, planking, the ice bucket challenge, the mannequin challenge, the Tide Pods. Already, Cardi B's WAP is kind of hazy in the rearview mirror, isn't it? 2020 produced a glossary of fear. Comorbidities, ventilators, super spreaders, social distancing, aerosol transmission, quarantine, lockdown. But already, some of those catchphrases are losing steam, like flatten the curve. What happened to that one? Already new ones are arriving to keep the terror going. The latest one seems to be variant. That's the bridge fear word to take us into 2021. Stupid sheeple love the phrase, the new normal. What makes them so stupid is the absence of two letters. What we're experiencing is the new abnormal. But when you've got an entire generation raised to accept metal detectors and pat-downs and drug tests and active shooter drills at school and work, well, it probably does seem normal. After you pile up significant years and decades, the New Year's get kind of blurry, only a few stand out. As a really small kid, I mean like 4, maybe 5, I was obsessed with New Year's Eve and the ritual of counting down to midnight. Why? Yeah, movies and TV, I guess. Hollywood-fabricated New Year's parties always look cool and fabulous. Cary Grant or James Bond and Bentleys and statuesque women and the opulent casino in Monte Carlo. Then there was the element of the unknown. I'd never been up until midnight, never mind on New Year's Eve. Young kids tend not to think much past any given event, like what happens when the clock strikes 12 and it's officially a new year? Then what? Becoming an adult, and that sometimes occurs much earlier than age 21, you discover the answer is not a fucking thing. The clock strikes 12 and everything is the same as it ever was. Until it isn't. But really young kids and low-wattage adults of all ages, and I do mean all ages, they often believe that something magical will happen. On this New Year's Eve, as a 4 or 5-year-old, I went to bed as usual, maybe, I don't know, 8, 9 o'clock. But this time, I was goddamn determined to witness the arrival of a new year. Even beyond the movies, all the artwork and advertising looked cool and glamorous. There was usually a clock tower over a fabulous Manhattan skyline. Sleek limousines gliding up to ritzy nightclubs where uniformed doormen would open that door and out would step dudes in tuxedos and the pointiest babes imaginable wearing white mink coats and spike ankle straps with dresses slid up to their hips. And they'd high-step into the club, which appeared to be barely controlled mayhem and debauchery. What went on in there? And what about all those cool drawings of some old coot hobbling along on a cane with a white beard to his knees? And whistling past him was a baby, but not really a baby, because this baby wore a top hat and a smirk, and he strutted past the old guy like king shit. And babies can't walk anyway, but this New Year was his, and he owned it. I actually witnessed that very scene, the uber-glamorous one of my crazy childhood fantasies as an adult, but it did not work out as I had imagined. Not at all. Fate loves throwing curveballs. I'll circle back to that in a little, but let's return to me at age 5, determined to be awake when the new year arrived. It was a bitter cold December evening. Some of the toys Santa had brought were already in pieces, and those who were not had already lost their luster and allure. They were no longer placed alongside my bed for constant access. That always meant the toy honeymoon was over. We lived in a tiny shingled house in Queens, New York, 3 bedrooms and 1 bath. Although ancient, it was in excellent shape. There wasn't a drafty corner or a rattling window. The heat was the greatest system ever devised. Gas-fired hot water radiators. Those things would warm up quick and make any room toasty and keep it that way. So on this New Year's Eve, I lay in bed desperately trying to stay awake. I had a plan. And the plan was, a little before midnight, I would sneak down the stairs like a ninja and get a full view of whatever the hell was going on and solve this damn mystery. Was it possible that old guy with the beard and the top hat baby were an actual thing like Santa Claus? Maybe did they march through everyone's house at the stroke of midnight? Would shiny black limos be pulling up in front of our little house? I knew Mom and Dad had bought a bottle of champagne and invited some friends and neighbors over. Most had arrived before my bedtime, but they were just the usual boring people. But kids' imaginations are built to defy logic, aren't they? I hated the interval between bedtime and sleep because most nights I was certain some horrible creep who resembled Freddy Krueger but without the metal hands, that he was hiding in my closet ready to leap on me and choke me out. Part of evading the ghoul was to remain as immobile as possible. Even scratching an itch would alert him to my presence, and then only God knew what would happen. Would my old man hear the ruckus and make it upstairs in time to save me? And this night, it was extra dicey with all the commotion downstairs, hors d'oeuvres and whatever. People were laughing, there was music coming from the TV. Women cackled. Though my parents never smoked, somebody was. The cigarette smoke wafted upstairs. I probably drifted off a couple times, but somehow, my internal clock awakened me. I couldn't tell time yet, but I had a feeling it still hadn't happened. Now my dilemma was how to leap out of bed in a single bound so this closeted ghoul whom I called the Peanut Man, I guess he was kind of a hybrid of Freddy and the famous Planters character. But I screwed up my courage and made it from the bed to the doorway in one mighty jump. Moreover, I landed on my toes. No audible thud. The stairs were right outside my door. I started my descent. Once I got 4 or 5 steps down, I had a decent view of this party. It sure as hell didn't look like any of those New Year's parties in the movies. No white mink coats. No slinky pointy babes in spike heels. No tuxedos. Grandpa and my spinster aunt were still there. And the same dull neighbors. Somebody looked at their watch and said, 5 minutes to go. So I wasn't too late. The crappiest old fart big band music imaginable was coming from the TV. Maybe they would switch to some happening party with limos and babage. I had to get a closer look, just in case. I belly crawled down the rest of the stairs and hid under the dining room table. The tablecloth gave me perfect cover. I could see everybody, hear every word in person as well as from that television. There was a party on that TV, all right, and it looked as if it was a live feed from a nursing home. Bloated matrons with ankles like capstans, wearing wedgies and industrial-strength Band-Aid-colored nylons, compressing gnarly root systems of varicose veins. They lumbered around the dance floor, holding up their even more decrepit husbands. At least the women all seemed to have their wits about them, but the men, every one of them, looked as if they'd just been smacked by a 2x4. Bewildered. Had it been a network TV show, it would have been called Dancing with the Soon-to-Be Dead. The camera wove between the revelers, so you could see every liver spot, every melanoma, every waddle swaying from every double or triple chin. Many of those waddles were cleaved in two by the elastic chin straps of those idiotic conical paper New Year's party hats. Who wears those things? They did, that's who. Then the countdown began, and they cut to Times Square and the famed ball. And growing up in New York, I'd been to Times Square, and I knew it to be a filthy, dangerous shithole. But I still held out hope that maybe New Year's and that dropping ball would transform it into something glorious. As the countdown progressed, they cut to the crowd in the street. They looked exactly like the wrinkles in the studio, except they were younger and freezing cold and packed like cattle in a stockyard. Same stupid hat, same stupid noisemakers. And then the ball dropped, and they screamed Happy New Year. My dad kissed my mom. The other guests hugged. Champagne glasses clinked, and still not a trace of limos or 007 or pointy chicks. On the TV, they cut away from Times Square and back to the dance party as the band played Auld Lang Syne. And confetti and balloons rained down from the rafters. My disappointment was profound. I'd stayed up past midnight, witnessed the countdown and the dropping ball, and nothing. Nothing had changed. Not one fucking thing. On the TV, that camera again meandered through the shuffling geriatrics and paused to capture an old woman as she blew her roll-out noisemaker. When she did, the end popped off and a spray of saliva splattered the lens. They quickly switched to another camera, but I saw what I saw, and it was all I could take. It was too much for my young mind to process. I was expecting James Bond and sleek vixens, and I was getting Ma and Pa Kettle, so I hurled a powerful jet of puke across the Cecil carpet. My mother grabbed me and ran me upstairs to the can, figuring there was more to come, but my stomach was empty. She stuck a thermometer in my mouth, figuring I must have a flu. I didn't have the guts to tell her. I was simply grossed out by what I'd seen on that TV, compounded by a sense of being gypped, that's what. All those New Year's Eve party scenes in the movies and TV shows were bullshit. She cleaned me up and put me back to bed. I checked the closet for the peanut man. He was nowhere in sight. Mom yanked the pull chain on the overhead light, and I was once again in darkness. I felt bad about the carpet. Dad was probably working on it right now with a scrub brush and a bucket of Lestoil. The pull chain was weighted with a little traffic light that glowed in the dark with that milky green luminescence those things all have. I watched it sway back and forth, and the last thought I had was, what about the bearded old man and the smart aleck baby with the top hat and sash? Were they bullshit too? Fast forward several decades, and I am on a very upscale cruise ship in the Caribbean, New Year's Eve. I'm with the extended family, including my in-laws. One of those rare occurrences where everyone's availability and motivation just aligned perfectly so it could happen. Really a once-in-a-lifetime gathering. There was a massive ballroom with top-shelf booze and food and white-gloved waiters circulating, fetching drinks and hors d'oeuvres. I did not see 007, but there were plenty of tuxedos and pointy babage galore. On stage was a fantastic orchestra. We didn't want the kids to miss out on anything, so I had my younger daughter in my arms. A steward approached me and asked her age. I told him 4, and he said that made her the youngest person on board, and would I please bring her to the stage just before midnight for a tradition they held every New Year's Eve. At about 5 minutes to midnight, I hoisted her up on stage where the captain stood alongside a huge Liberty-style bell. Flanking the skipper was a very old man. The band fell silent, and the captain introduced the old gentleman, who was 95 years of age. Then, my little girl. The youngest and oldest people aboard the entire ship. That old man's life had spanned 2 world wars, the Wright brothers, nuclear power, space travel, and the digital age. Who knew what mysteries would unfold in my daughter's time? The skipper handed each of them a mallet and had them strike the bell as the crowd counted in the new year. I don't think there was a dry eye in that ballroom. I know mine weren't. I finally got to see the old man and the baby of New Year's lore in person in an ultra-glamorous setting. I never imagined the baby would be mine. That's a sweet curveball. Thanks for hanging with me once again. It's always great to be with you. For more content and commentary, stop by the show page at thatlarryshow.com. There are other New Year's episodes and stories in there, including one of the most downloaded ever, My New Year's with the Mob, an amazing and true story that includes gunplay, brutality, and some of New York's top Cosa Nostra figures. It's episode number 2 in the December 2016 tab. While you're there, why not click the Patreon button and help support the show? When you become a patron, you unlock the doors to the Take No Shit Dojo from whence this show emanates each week. There you will find dozens of bonus episodes where we get a little more personal and contentious. There are signed books, custom recordings, and more, like access to our deep bench of senseis who have a remarkable record of helping listeners with life's dilemmas, love, work, school, family, even New Year's. Shoot me an email at thatlarryshow@gmail.com and we'll try to help you out. My friends, whatever your plans be for this new year, remember this. It's only an arbitrary date on a calendar cooked up 500 years ago by some pope. For the most part, we decide what kind of year we will have. Don't let the fear merchants sell you their yoke of anxiety and terror. You decide whether your new year is happy, not them. See you next Wednesday, and until that time, take no shit.